This week on RSBNB Update, Halloween 2021 brings two new mini-quests and some cosmetics, new and old, that'll have you making soup for hours. We then preview the Zekar front and the epic new sword and capes. Finally, Zamorak brings on the necromancers and the speculation. This is RSBNB Update, episode 852, recorded Thursday, October 21st, 2021. Zook Down Under. Hello, everybody, and thank you for joining us for another episode of RSBNB Update. Tanis, you're here as you are each and every week. Welcome back.
Thank you, Shane. I made it back. I came back.
Good.
And I'm here.
Good. The Cambridge mob didn't get you.
They didn't get me, and I'm feeling good. We got some stuff this week, and we got some stuff to talk about.
Very good stuff. Also joining us to talk about some of this stuff, including the weekly God Banter, is Chaos Elemental, one of the fine, fine people who helped us in producing that last wonderful monthly bid, a Clan Quest member and an avid lorehound. Welcome aboard.
Jane, thanks. I'm really excited to be on board and to dig into some of the really great content that we have upcoming next week and for the rest of 2021, quite honestly.
Yeah, this is going to be...
Yagex is moving really quickly with this stuff.
It's going to be a big front this week, and I imagine there's going to be a surprise after this, just in terms of, you know, wrapping everything up, where all the folks are at and whatnot. But just for people... who are listening, give a bit of a brief rundown about your RuneScape history.
So I played RuneScape back in the heyday of 2007, 2008. I did the thing that everybody seems to do, which is quit after a certain number of years, only to come hurtling back when I have a bit more of a disposable income after about a decade of inactivity. And after I came back in, I really got involved in the lore again, wrote an extremely long fan fiction that ended up getting a Golden Gnome nomination, and now I am head over heels in all of the content that is being produced and being shown to us right now, and it's absolutely exciting. It's been really crazy to watch the game evolve over the past 10, 15 years or so, and I'm just really hyped to see what our lovely content creators have coming up for us.
Yeah, and you know, I feel we're at a precipice in terms of where we can go with this at the end of this year. We thought the archaeology year was something, but I think this Elder God Wars year is very interesting in terms of the lore aspect. I know we're going to have a lot of big discussions next week on a myriad of aspects, and we'll get some of your speculation in on that later, Tanis, because I did ask you this week, I said, how are you feeling about this? How are you feeling about this being a solo wave-based front? But we'll get to all that later, of course, because accessibility is a huge question. I am Shane 12088 in game. She is Chaos Elemental, and you can find Tanis at Tanis79. And with that being said, let's just dive right in to this. If you want to follow along, we do have the show notes available at update.rsbnb.com, and we have the Halloween event for 2021. It's back this year. They're using the same format as last year. They're bringing back three activities, including Death's Dogwalker, Fragmented Souls, and of course the Plague Soup, because you gotta have Plague Soup in the middle of a pandemic, right?
There is nothing like making small talk with other people while you harvest pestilent potatoes.
Or onions or cabbages for that matter as well.
At least nobody's asking you what your woodcutting level is.
Yeah. True. Let's just get a quick feel. How are you feeling about the Halloween this year, Tanis?
Blah.
Yeah.
So it's almost like
overshadowed by everything.
Well, it's that too, but it's an attempt to try to make the same thing that they've done with the beach and the spring festival. Now I see an attempt to do the same thing with Halloween, yeah, because we've got the same stuff.
Yeah.
Now they've added like two new things,
two new mini quests and activities.
But I was just kind of like, eh, because with the exception of those two things, we've seen everything, we've done everything. There wasn't enough to pull. I mean, here's the problem. There wasn't enough to pull me out of cutting Elder Lux. You know how exciting that is?
Yeah.
But well, there wasn't enough reason to just stop and go do that.
And we need to be clear on this. You're saying exciting, and you're not being disingenuous about that. You're actually being 100% genuine on that, because I feel exactly the same way on this, believe it or not.
Yeah.
I also have PVM going on this year, which I didn't last year. We have, of course, the Croesus Front, which we actually went back to twice last weekend. But how do you feel about it this year, Chaos?
I'm in general agreement. Call me a crusty old hag, but I really miss those very storyline-driven events of the past.
Like the bespoke ones?
Yes. They reference the fact that the account that I was playing on did the Spider Realm quest, you know, back in, I think it was 2008, 2009. Yeah. And that made me really sad because I really enjoyed that. Mm-hmm. We didn't have to do a ridiculous grind to, you know, get a cute little pet or to get interesting cosmetics or what have you. We just did the quest. We bounced off the characters. We got a little bit more about the world, and it was very charming and interesting.
Yeah.
I won't touch upon it too much, but I did go through the OSRS Halloween event, and, you know, it had all of that charm. Whereas RS3, again, it was just the make small or talk around a bunch of rotten potatoes, which is okay, I guess. But I want that questy part back again.
Are we heading?
For me,
okay, carry on. Sorry for interrupting.
For me, I don't care so much about the cosmetics and everything as the dialogue that I get out of it. You know, run through it, and I talked to the characters. I am very excited about the fact that they updated the werewolf models. They look great. They look very nice. Look at the chat heads and everything, but I feel like they could have put a lot more into it.
I feel like we're on the edge of one of those things that happens, or that happened at RuneFest 2018, in which I was passing through the hall when the old school talk was about to begin with Sirion, and instead of getting lunch, we managed to watch the entire old school talk. It was very interesting, and it was something that we didn't really know how to metabolize for a couple of days after the fact. And I'm actually glad that you brought up the old school event on that as kind of just to compare and contrast, because I really didn't think to look at what old school might be doing for Halloween this year. Did you, Tanis?
You know, old school, new school, we're on Scape here, right?
Yeah, I mean, I'd prefer it to be one Scape.
No, I haven't. And I guess that I'm glad Chaos did, because that's interesting, especially with the coming tie-ins that we're gonna have.
Yeah. The two new mini quests this year focus around the shooting gallery and the skeleton invasion. First one is Ed having trouble with his crafty Crassians, and what you need to do with that is just man the cannons for enough of a time period to put these people down. This activity replaces the potato gathering from 2020, and the skeleton invasion is the task that grants magic and slayer. It is not AFKable, and your character does these amazing run-throughs with this sword. And this one's actually just outside of the main area in Draenor. I'm actually quite pleased with how this one looks when your character engages in this. So
I agree. I really like the mechanics, specifically of the one that bounces damage from skeleton to skeleton. Yeah. You know, if it weren't such a grind fest, I think I would be, more invested in that. I think it could be a real part of me wonders if it's going to be a mechanic that they're testing out that's going to carry over. I wouldn't really know, but if they had that for a weapon special effect, I wouldn't protest, because I think it looks very interesting and it makes you strategize.
Yeah. And with this one, starting the Greg quest, you talk to Luna. And you get Luna's compass, and you basically need to dig up the various sword parts and then take them back to Greg, who repairs the sword and asks you to test it by killing 20 skeletons. And after killing the skeletons, you unlock the extra abilities. And with this, you actually also unlock the Arteria cosmetic effect, which overrides the appearance of two-handed weapons if you so desire. So there is reason to do these aside from just unlocking the materials. And I'm just gonna rip the Band-Aid off right now. And I don't want anyone to smack me for this, but there is an NPC, after you donate some blood to power up the sword, who says, "Are you guys both sitting down?"
Uh-huh.
"Whoa, Master, it's such a pleasure to meet you."
"I've come to the conclusion that we know why Draenor was banished from Mauritania. And it is because he probably possessed that weapon."
I practiced that for the show. I don't normally have to practice these things, but the person I practiced with hung up on the Discord call 3 times.
"Let's hope they don't sue for damages."
"I'm sorry, I just had to bring that up, that we have one of these talking possessed sword heads in game like that now." "I never thought I'd see the day that we'd have that in RS3, but lo and behold, there it is."
"I mean, they have the cat ears in OSRS."
"Yeah, so I mean, you can, and you can, I guess, kind of, if we had a similar thing, you could kind of just, you know, put any kind of furry costume together with a tail, like the rabbit, maybe, and away you go."
"There's something for everyone."
"Right, and hey, if it's Halloween, let them dress up, right?"
"Yeah. But only on Halloween, because it's not that kind of fantasy game."
"That's right, RuneScape is not that kind of fantasy game." All right, I just want to talk a bit about the best ways to level through getting all the cosmetics that you might want. Obviously, the mini quests are probably going to take a tops 10 minutes of your time. In general, the assumption that people I've been talking to have said is you're going to get around 2,400 tokens an hour doing the Plague Soup. And if you want to have a bit more active play, you can get somewhere up to around 4,600-4,700 tokens per hour with the Shooting Gallery with the cannons. That's what I have verified with the Plague Soup. I did not test the cannons yet, but it's 100% doable, I think, and you're going to want to do that because there's some extra new rewards. If you complete both mini quests this year, you get the Death Silver Scythe, which is a free upgrade. You can also buy any of the upgrades from previous Halloween events that were in the store, but also new this year, we have Loba, which is a new companion pet available for 9,000 spooky tokens. We also have a consumables section available, which includes medium and small lamps, bonus XP stars, and event mystery boxes, and big event mystery boxes, which are what we've come to expect over time. And then, of course, the legacy cosmetics. They didn't really say what these were going to be, but we now know that they include the spooky spider parasol, the spooky spider outfit and teleport, the Eensy spider companion pet, the inflorescent wings, the decaying wings, and roots, which is another companion pet that go back to previous Halloween events before 2018. I was kind of hoping we'd get the scythe from 2003 in here, but I guess not. That was probably too much to ask.
Well, I don't know. We got the one that I wanted.
Which one was that?
That's Eensy.
Oh, okay. You didn't have that before?
Yeah. Mm-mm.
All right, fair enough. What's your favorite reward? Are you going for any with these chaos?
I might go for the scythe. I do have all the cosmetic rings, so I could stand around looking like Laura at the GE when I'm a little bored.
Right.
So I might go for Eensy as well, if only so Eek has a friend.
Oh yeah, that makes sense.
I still have my
Eek
pet
from
2008.
Yeah. And you know, I think the special thing out of all these Halloween events is just, you know, the sheer legacy behind these. And I'm going to say that, you know, as always, the environment they updated last year still looks wonderful now. I don't think that they've come to top the Halloween inside Death's House, but, you know, there's always next year. I guess, on that. And it's just a question at this point in time, are players going to spend the time, you know, gathering potatoes or firing cannons or playing with swords outside to earn Halloween tokens when this event disappears on November 1st? We have the front coming up on Monday. That's going to be drawing people's attention Monday, away.
It's dead on Monday.
Yeah.
Stick a fork in it.
And
as dead as a Halloween quest could be, I suppose.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's
and
true.
It's right. going to be, you know, it's going to take you a while to get through all these. I think the estimate that was made is it's 9 to 12 hours to unlock all of the legacy cosmetics. And that's even, you know, not considering anything like Death Scythe if you didn't get that, or the new Loba pet. So it's you're going to have to really make a question about whether you want to be there or not doing that. And Tanis, I know you and I could probably have this discussion as well. Those splintering arrows and elder logs, they're actually selling for a pretty penny. So, I mean, it's a hard choice for me.
Yeah, it's not really that hard. I mean, I like to go get that pet, but
yeah. Because I sold 1,200 arrows and another 1,000 logs on top of that, and that was around 40 mil.
People are stocking up for the big day.
Yeah. So, I don't know. But it's Halloween. It's a holiday event. I don't think there's anything else that I have left to say on this. We went through the new quests, the new mini quests, and we talked about the best ways to level this up. So I'm keen to move on, unless you guys have anything else you want to bring up regarding Halloween 2021 in RS.
I will say the new sky boxes that they have with this, they look absolutely gorgeous. Yeah. I've seen some really excellent screenshots. And I'm glad that they did take the opportunity in the little bit of activity we got from this to finally wrap up the storyline of who was the werewolf guard's love interest that he kept on talking about since River of Blood.
Wow.
This was foreshadowed.
I must have missed that. And, you know,
I got some deep cut.
We'll just say spoilers ahead for the next 30 seconds, but who was it?
It was the other werewolf in the quest.
Okay.
The guard was Greg, and he was interested in Ed, I believe.
Interesting.
It was actually pretty cute.
Okay. Fascinating. And, you know, being Halloween, I'm going to have to just say I didn't really pay that much attention to some of the dialogue for this, just because it was Halloween.
Oh, no, he spacebarred it.
Oh, no!
I did spacebar it, and I did have to go back just to, you know, capture that screenshot of the.
I'm going to have to report you to the lore police.
Yeah, I just hope that none of them are listening to this, because then they'll be after me.
It's a little redundant. You don't want people listening to your podcast.
we'll be fine. Okie dokie. Time to move on then. All right. So, patch notes this week. Archglacier click boxes have been updated, which I didn't really notice being much of a problem. And I don't know if you PVM Chaos. Did you try the Archglacier when it came out, being safe death and all that for normal mode?
Did, and it was actually very enjoyable.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of being able to learn the mechanics, right, and everything. So, and I went to grouping with safe mode, so it was pretty straightforward.
Yeah. Apparently, this patch that updates the click boxes for this makes the world a difference in terms of targeting things like arms and whatnot, just to make sure that you actually hit what you want to hit when you're killing down those hard mode fights. So the PVMers are very, very grateful for these changes.
That was a major gripe that I've been hearing about.
Yeah. Glacier remnants will now be dropped in correct quantities depending on how many of the Archglacier's mechanics are active. So you weren't getting the right amount of remnants this wasn't scaling up based on the number of mechanics as it should have. The Carapac pet broadcasts are now more consistent about the kill count at which the pet was obtained. Players will no longer benefit from the furnace perk during the Croesus encounter. This is actually a really interesting one, because the few days before Croesus came out, we were told that this wouldn't be a problem. But lo and behold, everybody gets in there and it's like, oh, my furnace perk is eating up the resources I need to progress the boss fight. This isn't good.
I'm surprised that they didn't extend the same thing to the shark outfit.
Yeah, because that would consume what you catch as well. And I think you just have to turn that off, thinking about it. Interesting. I wonder if that'd be too much of a hook to add in for the shark outfit as well. Sticky fungus will no longer spawn under the ground. The problem that this was having was that some of the geometry of the ground objects in the Croesus fight were making sticky fungus so you couldn't see it, so you'd actually have to right-click it in order to find it underneath your feet, and, you know, if you don't act quick enough on that, it started hurting you a lot, so that's good that that was fixed. And Croesus will now visually open up if a statue is triggered after it closes its core. Sometimes it wasn't doing that. There was a bug that was the other way around, where you could get stuck inside Croesus even if it was closed up and keep damaging it. So both sides of that have now been fixed. And I'm going to actually insert my own patch note here, because this one needs to be talked about and wasn't talked about, but the font changed again this week.
People have been surprisingly up in arms about the font change, and I'm just wondering what's going on.
So the initial font change happened because they said they were taking the chat font to a TrueType font, meaning it's easier to scale up and down for various device sizes and various point sizes, whereas their old font was based off of bitmap-based glyphs, which made it incredibly hard to scale. So the font that we're supposed to have is a font called Noto Sans, which is an open Google font. I run mine at 12 point, and I did a comparison. I typed out a line of text in Photoshop at 12 point Noto Sans. I had a screenshot of what it used to look like in game prior to the patch this week, and then I typed out that exact same line again this week in game. And if you compare the what we have this week in game to something from Photoshop, they're a lot similar now compared to what we had prior to this week's update. So what seemingly happened before this week's update is that what we were getting was not as advertised for that actual font size. It was supposed to be 12 point, but it was probably somewhere closer to 11 because it was compressed both vertically and horizontally. But after this week's update, it's a font that is much more representative of what you'd expect it to look like if you were to actually write out that font in, say, somewhere like Photoshop or Word. So I don't know why people were upset about this one. Honestly, for me, this week, it made it feel more readable. Tanis, how did you feel about the font this week?
That's funny you should ask, because I don't look at the chat box a lot, but I've actually been looking at it now since we started, and I thought, that seems like it's easier to read.
Yeah.
So that was
my They also made it pop a bit more in terms of how it was outlined, I find, this week.
Yeah, well, what I'm noticing is for me, because I have it blown up and I've kind of got it just the way that I have the box shaped. It seems to be working out where I'm getting two lines per, you know, chat message or what have you. And it's spaced out just right.
And I actually pulled up the measuring stick in Photoshop and measured the old font compared to the new font. And the old one was a good pixel and a half shorter than the new one is, if you actually go out and measure it. So that combined with the spacing just makes it a whole lot more readable, because it's also spaced differently and it's actually a little bit bigger as well in terms of what you're expecting. Though people still feel as though that, you know, 10 might be too small, 12 too big, and people have been requesting that there's options for in between, which I guess there'd be no reason they couldn't do that now, given that it's a TrueType font. I guess it's just something maybe with the font selection UI. But I just wanted to bring that up because I heard a lot of complaining about it this week. What about you, Chaos? Did you hear complaining, or what was your general sense of what people were telling you, or what you thought of the font?
The key point there is just confusion, maybe a little bit of curmudgeon-y-ness.
Yeah.
People do like consistency, especially when it comes to UI. And from my experience, I know when the UI changes, even if it is for the better, I mean, yeah. How many times has your phone updated? And even if it's better, you go, oh my God, I can't find anything now. It's just a part of that need for consistency in one's environment. So, and hopefully now that it has been changed to be a little bit more readable, it'll stay that way. And people will continue to find some way to complain about something on Reddit, but
I'm wondering if this had an impact on Alt One.
That's a good question, actually. So I don't know off the top of my head, but
Tannis, do you still have that thing set up where it reads to you?
No, I haven't used it for a while.
All right, fair enough. But you know, if we're on this path now, TrueType fonts, I'll say, do more, do the inventory and skills window next, or maybe even the bank in terms of fonts. I would love that personally. Those would be my choices for UI. To have the fonts done on them next. So not too often that I have to insert my own patch note into this week, but other fixes include the Guthix butterfly blessing will now correctly follow you after teleporting, prevented Hearts of Ice messaging from popping up the wrong time, and monkey trinkets now require the correct amount of XP to be earned before rewarding their respective lamps. And I had to actually look this one up because I was thinking, where the heck do we get monkey trinkets? And going back to it, this was one of those time-limited events, the Zodiac training event, believe it or not.
Oh, I figured it was some kind of treasure hunter BS.
Well, it is. It is a treasure hunter thing.
There we go.
And finally, the well-being bundle has been extended until October 31st. There are 50,000 of these in stock initially. And I'm actually just logging in right now to see where we're at on this, because I hope that it's selling, because this one actually goes to charity.
Right.
And it's only one bond, so I mean, if you have the money, pick it up. But I think one bond at this point, we're looking for something like 37-38 mil, which is kind of steep when you think about it. All right.
Yeah, it just depends how easy you make money.
There's 38,120 left.
Yeah, that's why it would be extended.
So they've sold 12,000 and almost 12,000 of them. So let's just assume for a minute here that we decided that we were going to, you know, just value this at the $5 bond price. And they did sell 12,000 by the end of this. That's $60,000 for charity with this one well-being event bundle. So
that's not bad. That split, what, three ways?
Yeah, three charities. Yeah. Which, I mean, in the current climate that we're in, I think any charity would be happy for a donation of that much money. So,
oh, God, yeah.
So even if it doesn't sell out completely, it's still a good thing that's been done.
Absolutely.
I love what Jagex always does with their charitable efforts. So. All right, let's move on to the Zekhar front. Right now, we got the name of it. We thought it was going to be the full front, but it's actually the Zekhar front, not the Takhar, the Tsar, but the Zekhar front. And I'm going to play the trailer for this because this one's actually pretty hype from what we've seen. So, folks listening on audio can have a listen, but this is what it looks like. Face the final front.
I await a worthy foe. Is there anyone in this alliance worthy enough to face me? Refuse, and this world will burn.
Clash with the ultimate champion. Prove your worth in waves of combat. Earn Zook's tier 95 two-handed. Best in slot capes, and more.
Enough! I will finish this myself.
Whoever thought we'd see an electronic guitar in the RuneScape Elder God Wars?
You know what? Awesome. I have to say, Mod Surma has done it again. I'm excited. That song gets my blood going, and I'm here for it.
Yeah. And I was actually going to preview this at the end of our segment here, but since we're on the topic of audio, he's got another preview here of audio from the fight, so we'll just give that a listen right now.
What makes you think you have what it takes? Perhaps you are worthy to die by my blade. A champion rises. Show me you are worthy. Even the weak may rise from the ashes. Now, the true battle begins.
That's different, and it's unlike anything we had in any of the other fronts, and I think it sells it completely with what we're getting here.
I think
it's rock and roll.
Yeah, it's setting it up. It's saying this fight is going to be metal.
That's actually a really, really good way of looking at it. And as everybody had expected, it is something wave-based. It's 100% solo-based. They said it feels more like an Elite Dungeon than the previous Fight Cave or Fight Kiln fights. Tanis, what's your early thoughts on that being solo-based and what we've had in terms of accessibility problems in the previous three fronts?
Well, they're not quite batting a thousand here, are they, Shane?
No.
But yet again, I'm going to hope against hope that it's going to turn out okay. And there's some reason to be optimistic, just with my past success with that style. You know, I've done the fight caves. I did, you know, Jad. I've made it through the kiln many times. I did the kiln so many times. I got that enhanced fire cape before they messed with it, made it not so pretty. So those actually are that's something I've been able to do in the past. The reason I think was because I could keybind the prayer switches,
right?
So that was kind of a first. It all depends on the implementation, right?
And,
I hope,
and how drawn out it is between and whatnot, I'd say. And so at this point, I remind the listeners that Tanis plays through these fronts legally blind, uses a screen magnifier, and has a, what would you say, 20% of the field of view that we have on our screen or less?
Oh, probably less than that. Gosh.
Well,
you know,
what
just
do you,
for, just for, I
what
mean,
do you
for
normally
example,
run the magnifier
right,
at in terms of percentage?
300.
Okay. So that gives you a pretty good idea right there. It's just that, you know, imagine zooming in on your screen with a times 3 and then needing to move that magnifier around to fight. And that's why we're always on the accessibility push here is because when you have things that are really far drawn out, like Battle of the Monolith was, that creates problems. But on the other hand, something that's a lot more contained probably isn't too bad, right?
Right. You know, I was always thinking back to the Kiln, you know, there were places I could be under, I could like understand the terrain to where I wasn't getting mobbed,
that kind of thing.
But, you know, a tower defense, like what...
that didn't work out.
Well, no, because the field of view is just, it's just too great of a challenge to overcome. There's no way to do that. But this is more akin to Slayer with a boss at the end. And that I can do. So I'm hopeful. It just depends on what kind of mechanics they put into the boss.
And it's only going to be 17 waves. I say only, not knowing how hard each wave is going to be, but 17 waves. Then you face Zook at the end.
And dead is dead, apparently, in this one.
Yes. It's not a safe fight.
You know, which I didn't think the others were safe, but I guess it's been a long time since I did them.
They are.
Yeah.
There's checkpoints, though, throughout each, so you can do that, but that doesn't count as a flawless run. We'll talk more about why you want that after the fact, but I'm going to kind of just dive into a bit of the stuff that was talked about on the live stream this week, a few points. And coming from Mod Jack on the lore side of this, in RuneScape 3, when the Tsar were breaking through and trying to find a new egg chamber, they actually found the Elder Kiln. And when they found Zook, they assumed it was one of their creations that had gone crazy, according to Mod Jack. But in Old School, he's actually kind of depicted as a wild animal. And in Old School's Inferno, you go meet Tsar Ketka, and he tells you about an egg chamber that has a big monster in it, which happens to be Zook. So once again, we're seeing that difference of interpretations of the two different storylines, or the same storyline here, just interpreted differently. And what I'm wondering from this is that, do you guys think this will potentially bring some Old School people over to kind of experience it?
Oh God, we better hope not.
Wouldn't that be a good thing?
No. I don't think so.
Okay.
No.
What do you think, Chaos?
I honestly think, you know, just judging how people tend to be curious, I think it certainly may bring over some OSRS folks, if they're not too occupied with Rube Iron Man right now, to check it out. And if they find it intriguing and if they're able to navigate the combat system, you know, kudos to them. I've actually been seeing kind of a trend in more posts saying, you know, taking a break from OSRS. I checked out RS3. It's actually not as awful as I thought was. So maybe I'm a little bit more enthusiastic in that sense. A little bit more optimistic in that sense. But Questkeeping said, the boss swap program between OSRS and RS3 is off to a swimming start.
What are we going to give them in exchange? We're going to give them Raksha?
They're getting Nex.
Oh, right.
And it's old style Nex. So it's Nex as when she first came out, looking like a chicken.
Wow.
Yeah, right. What's that treasure hunter boss? That's what we're going to give them.
The chest, the mimic. With
the big tuck. The mimic.
Yeah. Oh, wouldn't that be sweet?
So the lore poetry for me and how they've divested from the OSRS lore is very interesting, personally, if we want to go into
that.
Yeah,
please expand a bit on that, your thoughts.
So I think it's, of course, very natural, I think, for OSRS and RS3 to kind of divest from each other. And I think in a certain way, Jagex is able to kind of have their cake and eat it too and explore kind of different quest lines. I've certainly seen with the vampire quest line in OSRS, they kind of addressed some of the stuff that people were complaining about the vampire quest line in RS3. But I think the way that they have deviated from the lore So in RS3, Zook, he isn't this mindless animal that was discovered deep beneath the earth, but he was, according to the lore cutscene, he was a champion within the Zerosian Empire, who was the first champion of the fight caves.
Yeah.
And I think that this is kind of part of a larger trend of trying to make the bosses, and you know, this is part of RuneScape's bosses as a whole, but particularly within the Elder God Wars dungeon, trying to make them their own entities that are tied to the environment or us in some way. You know,
yeah, and path, you know, the first question I was wondering when we knew it was going to be Zook was, how exactly is he being compelled to do this by Full?
Mm. And it, the answer seems to be he just wants to fight.
Yeah.
So he's just in it to win it.
Yeah, a creation, obviously, that is just in effect bred to fight. And they say in the first teaser that we saw, you were expecting the Takhar, but the Zekhar that we're actually seeing, that we're going to see leading up to Zook, is in effect a reforged version of the Takhar by Full after their failure at the Battle of the Monolith, which I thought was interesting.
It says a lot, I think, about the characterization of the Elder Gods. And, I mean, this has probably been communicated 100 times over, but they see the fronts that they are putting forth as tools. You know, Karapak, he's not really enthused about the situation, but, you know, he has to do what he has to do. The Archglacier is perhaps the most animalistic of all of them. And kind of the blandest lore-wise, in my opinion, is just a big
piece of ice that came from a planet. Yeah. Yeah.
Croesus is tied to the history of Centistan and is even more animalistic. It's just a giant mushroom acting on instinct. Vic is just throwing it at us. And then, like we mentioned, Zook, he is just in it for the funsies. So, but it's interesting that they are tying him to the history of Centistan, you know, that he wasn't just found by the Tsar, that he was part of Centistan and that he participated in that before being exposed to the Elder Kiln and getting all souped up that way.
Yeah, and you know, you mentioned Centistan on this, and one of the things we see in the opening preview for this front is that, well, you know, that area we were walking by when you take part in the City of Centistan quest, that area that you walk around and where the supplies were being delivered, there's a crater there now, or there will be a crater there on Monday when this front arrives, and that's where you go down to actually fight Zook. So we were wondering, you know, what part of the city it's going to be in. Well, it's actually... The entrance to that is actually going to be right in where you come in during the quest. So it's going to be one in each corner.
If we may have a small moment of silence for the oxen that used to be there. They are now roast beef.
Yep. Down, deep below the crust.
So I got a question.
Please.
So since Zook or Zuck.
Let's not call him Zuck. Reminds me of Mark Zuckerberg.
And me too. And
I've already seen a couple of memes about that.
So lame. But the Zookster here, he's part of Santistan's lore. So is he a Tsar? Like, was he ever a Tsar? Or was he a human and then got souped up by Kim? Like, what is he?
From what I saw from the cutscene, from the still shot cutscene that they released, was he was a human gladiator, very very Conan the Barbarian kind of origin story. He was a human gladiator that was enslaved by the Zerosians. He was fighting for their entertainment, and eventually he got good enough where they're like, okay, you've done your time, you can go off. And he decided to go off into the world and find more things to fight. And that's when he discovered the Tazar City and the Fight Caves, and proceeded to become the first champion of the Fight Caves, apparently. So, and
okay,
but I believe he got his super duper lava monster status by being exposed to the energies of the Elder Kiln. They called him a demigod.
Yeah. So that was the general sense, is that the Fool's Elder Kiln, she used that, exposed him to that, and that gave him the power that we see now.
Mm. Yeah. Oh, and he fought Bandos in the God Wars. Apparently Bandos defeated him and chained him to the Elder Kiln, so that probably let him marinate a little bit more, you know.
That also explains why General Gradar will be the contact down in this front. That was talked about in the live stream as well. That General Gradar will be the contact down there.
Oh, okay.
Like, you know how we had Gorvek at Krosis and whatnot? And Azanandras.
You think he's going to shout at us, or probably not?
Probably not. So, next point that came from the live stream is that with this is that they take note of the time that all the other kiln fight takes. They say it will depend on the length of your skill. They were answering questions about this later on the week in Twitter, and they said probably bring 2 flasks of overload, just in terms of, just to be safe, that you're probably going to be down there for more than the 36 minutes that 1 flask would take. So keep that in mind. And they don't want the player to feel as though you've committed a long period of time and failed. So it will be built by an elite dungeon where you get loot along the way, and it will be saved in chests. But it is not a safe experience. And
it will be next week, though, right?
Yes, next week is a free death week, so it will be safe.
So get out there and punch stuff in the face.
So if you're going to do it, I think next week is probably the week to do it, honestly.
Continue to deprive Harold of his vacation fund, please.
Hey, I've still got several sets of obsidian armor.
Now, are they tradable?
No.
Oh, too bad.
I don't think so. But
that will work. It will not work.
Well, I wonder what's the full effect. Do we know the full effect?
Well, I see what you did. What you did there. What the full effect is. But obsidian will not work against the Zekar. It will work against the Takar that you meet, though. That was a distinction that was made. We need to be 100% clear on that, because the Zekar are different. Because remember, they've been recently reforged by Full, so there's no reason to expect that it would work. Obsidian would work. So your obsidian will only work against Takar that you meet down there.
Well, never mind. I saw that and I got excited.
But I mean, it might be a good thing to consider. I don't know what the breakdown is going to look like compared to how much Takar versus Zekar you're going to wind up seeing, but it might be a good thing to consider and try on the first couple runs, Tanis. So that's a good thing to think about.
Yeah, see if there's an armor. I may have to do Temple of Centistan now. I'm going to need that. Well, for the spell, I need the
spell.
I need the tank. Yeah, the tankiness.
Oh, animate dead with tank armor. Yeah. Because you remember that the Takar and whatnot are also weak against water primarily. So you could pair animate dead with the new Insight Fear spell and get some really interesting stuff happening. I actually have a story on that after for the What Have We Been Doing segment. They also note that if you use checkpoints, you will not gain a kill timer. And in terms of waves, there's going to be 17 waves, then Zook. So that's where we're at with this. Any other questions before we move on to the rewards?
No. I'm just really excited for this fight. I think it definitely has the setup to be both really interesting from a combat perspective, and also just from an environmental and a lore perspective.
Yeah.
I was watching the live stream and I saw them go through everything, and I'm just really right. Excited. And the thing to set the stage for something really cool.
And the thing to remember is that we're aiming this at a God Wars tier. We're not aiming this to be the next climber thing that is going to, smash your teeth in like Telos does. Sure, it might the first few times, but this is, of course, designed to be God Wars tier, so it's not going to be, you know, as difficult as something out there like Raksha is. But in any case, before we talk about the rewards, I want to thank our Patreon supporters for this week on the podcast. So I'd like to thank Amos Reed, Andrew C., Arvid Zell, Christian S., Chunk the Monk, Cook Me Plocks, Diana, Drama Free, Duramax, Hello Matey, a new arrival, Free Milk, Jade Gizmo, Jason S., Jeebus, Jesse W., Keski, Lucky Ducky, Nate the Great, Renhawk, Ricky A., Samuel FL, Seth W., Scott DS, Stub Eve, The Bears OP, The Naked Captain, The Lion, Tom V., and Zant. Thank you all of you for your support. It truly does mean the world to us, and this weekend we are doing the October RSBNB Update Roundtable, which will take place in our Discord server. Patreon members are encouraged to attend to that, but a readback will be made available of that after the fact for everybody. And also, speaking of everybody, for as little as a dollar a month, you gain access to the entire back catalog of monthly bits, including the one that we recently did, talking about where the Elder God Wars might end. I have a feeling that some things might be shifting on that, but I've been in contact with the group, Chaos included, that put this together, and I think we still feel happy about our idea. But if you want to listen to that or any of the other monthly bits that we put out, you can gain access to the entire back catalog of those for as little as a dollar a month. We also do have two additional tiers, one for $3 a month, where you'll get a special VIP rank on Discord and access to high-quality stereo versions of the show. And we also do have the Insider tier, where you get a shout-out each and every week on the podcast, and you gain exclusive access to the clips we use to make the clip show at the end of the year for $5 a month. And, of course, we are working to the Patreon mail-out, where patrons will receive a special postcard, which I can report that work has begun on. We gathered last weekend and put together some fun ideas for that. That was a fun little gathering, wasn't it, Tanis?
It was a good time.
Yeah. And of course, we also have the Hot Ones Challenge, should we ever reach 500. And we'll be subjecting our taste buds to spice that is apparently quite painful. Mm-hmm. Though I've never met a spice that I didn't like. So we'll see. We'll see.
I've never met one that I did like.
Oh, okay. Well, there's the difference right there. Well, let's just split the difference then.
Okay.
That might be the way of going about it. You fan of spice, Chaos?
Spicy
food? You fan of spicy food?
Oh, yeah. My parents raised me on Indian food. I'm currently in deep Tex-Mex territory. We just finished up a chili roasting season, so I now have a freezer full of Hatch and poblano chilies that I'm using pretty judiciously whenever I make stuff.
Ooh, that sounds neat. But I wonder how that compares to Hot Ones. Though I guess there's no way of knowing with that. So, all right.
It's hot. That's all I know.
Yeah, thanks so much, everyone. Check us out, patreon.com/RSBNB. All right, so for rewards from the full front, I guess I should be calling it the Zekar front now. I keep wanting to call it the full front. But starting off, of course, capes, the spiritual upgrade to the capes from the fire cape and the kiln. These are rewarded from a flawless normal run and will upgrade the accompanying kiln cape. They'll give 57 armor, a plus 43 combat boost to either strength, magic, or range, depending on the class, and a plus 2 prayer boost. And they also boost some ultimate abilities for each combat style to the point where the melee one boosts overpower to cost 60% adrenaline instead of 100. The ranged one does the same for deadshot and causes it to deal 42 to 210% of initial damage plus 70% ability damage every 1.2 seconds or 2 ticks for the next 8.4 seconds. And the magic cape does the same for omnipower and causes it to hit 4 times with each hit dealing 80 to 100%. Ability damaged, and the PVM folks in our Discord are pretty much all over these, but the emphasis seems to be towards the magic one. And Thaxi says that all of these changes effectively amount to 600% ability damage or so for 60% adrenaline in each style. So put simply, these capes are something you're going to want to try and get if you have one of the pre-existing kiln capes.
And I wonder if these things... Do we know if they're tradable?
No, they're not tradable.
They are not tradable.
These ones are not tradable.
I wonder if... Okay.
Yeah. Now, there's also the Igneous Kalzuk, which is rewarded for a flawless hard mode run, and it combines the previous three capes into one. Now, I'm not sure if this is going to be a hybrid cape or an all-damage cape. If it's hybrid, that could affect where it's used and make it not best in slot, because hybrid does impose an armor penalty on that, so that's something that we're waiting to hear about. But nonetheless, the three individual capes, I think, are something that I will probably be trying to go for. And just based on what these things look like, I just have to say that they look wonderful in terms of just how they're approaching cape design on this and just the colors that they radiate.
Oh, it's quite a legacy to live up to with that, right?
Yeah.
And my guess is they're going to go with an all type, because then it wouldn't have any reductions.
Yeah, I hope so. I hope so, in all honesty, because at that point, if it's a hybrid, you're better off just using this one that's specifically tailored to that style, unless you're specifically trying a hybrid.
So but that just wouldn't make any sense.
No, it wouldn't, but we just have to cover all our bases here. As for the Magma Tempest ability, it ignites a 5x5 grid of fire, requires a magic staff, lasts for 9.6 seconds, and hits 8 times for 5 to 25% ability damage. It can critically hit, which means it doesn't need a designated primary target, and that might create some interesting side effects with the Fractured Staff of Armadil, because that deals extra damage when it crits. So we're going to keep that in our back pocket as well for people who might have a tier 95 staff. We have a Scripture of Full that deals 20% more damage, but you take 10% more damage for 15 seconds after activating it. You do have a 15-second lockout with this. That means it likely can't refresh while it's active, and what this means at the whole is an average of 120% weapon damage over 10 seconds. This one is probably going to be easily comparable to the Wen Scripture, depending where they both fall, but they're all going to be fairly competitive with this. Okay, now I have some reading to do, because we are getting our first tier 95 two-handed sword with this. It comes in three parts from hard mode, and it's got a special attack called Igneous Cleave that only costs 50 adrenaline to fire off. It will deal 62 to 190% ability damage, plus 6 hits for 30 to 105% ability damage, which averages out to 67.5. That increases by 5% for each hit over the next 14.4 seconds. Now, here's where it gets really crazy. It can be extended by up to 5 hits with burns or bleeds. It can also interact with the Masterwork Spear of Annihilation that has its passive that increases bleed duration by 50%. So, in theory, what you're looking at with this is that somebody could put this new sword, which I'm going to try and say the name of, but I'll probably butcher, which is the Ek-Zekiel in an Essence of Finality, to use its special, though that'd be a huge cost, obviously, for the PVMers involved, which means most PVMers out there who want the best and greatest gear are probably going to be hunting down two of these swords. Or you could use some tick trickery to stall attacks, but we're not going to necessarily talk about that, because that's high levels of PVM that we're not here for this week. But what this means at the end of the day, put simply, is that without your Masterwork Spear and using this as an Essence of Finality attack, or the poison, this special attack should do about 1,085% ability damage. Add poison, that goes up to 1,181. Add your spear, it becomes 1,455, and add poison on top of that, 1,575%. 15 times normal damage with this special attack. And this is based on some number crunching that Thaxi did. This has a 60-second cooldown, takes 26 seconds with no spear to get this damage out, or 35 seconds with the spear, and since they're bleeds, they'll be unaffected by Berserk. But that's a 60-second cooldown for only 50% adrenaline. This has the power to really change melee, I feel, on this. And the discussions that were had today was that it's going to make it competitive in terms of that. And we'll have to, of course, you know, once they get their hands on these, we'll come back at the end of the year for that this year in PVM meta changes that we've been talking about. But oh boy, this is a big deal.
The tradable?
Yes, the pieces will be tradable.
But you can only get them from hard mode, huh?
Correct.
So what do you even get from regular mode? Just the cape?
The capes and the scripture.
Alright.
Yeah. Yeah. But, of course, there's also going to be the anima of full that will allow you to get the final upgrade for the Pontifex ring. And once fully upgraded, the ring will be able to be overpowered, which grants access to all of its previous buffs without being equipped. So that means you can have it not stun yourself at Karapak, and you can go back to using your Ring of Death or any of the rings that came from the Rex Matriarchs. It means for the Glacier, you'll have that extra protection percentage with your prayers, Krosis, less stat debuffs, and we don't know what the obvious effect will be in the Zekar front. And one final thing with this, there will also be a new item called Pernix's Quiver, which is made by receiving Quiver Fragments if you have the top-tier Pontifex ring. And with 100 fragments, you can craft this Quiver that allows access to 2 ammo slots that can be swapped through the ability menu. And it also increases ranged max attacks by 4% when fighting targets below 25% HP and will be tradable when crafted. So I guess this is the other thing that you have, Tanis, that you can pull apart with this or go hunting for in addition to the scripture and the capes. But you're kind of right on that, you know, we're aside from just generalist drops, we are kind of missing something else for people who aren't doing hard mode with this, because after you get your 3 capes, it said that the stone that you get, the igneous stone, you're just going to be able to disassemble it for some kind of components.
At least the kiln gave you an onyx.
Yeah. But I'd imagine, you know, based on what we've seen in the previous fronts, I'd imagine a run through, even at normal, would probably result in a chest worth of 8 to 12 mil at the end, just based on where the loot of all the other fronts have landed, if I had to take a guess.
Hmm.
So we'll have to wait and see what this does for people who aren't, you know, going out there on hard mode, because that's, of course, something that you and I probably aren't going to be doing too much of. So
yeah, I would doubt.
Yeah, so I hear your point on that. And last but not least, we have Little Zuck. Or Little Zook, sorry. Oh boy. Maybe if it was Little Zuck, we could have a talk about him making sure he doesn't create Facebook.
Maybe that's the new name, Little Zuck. Little Zuck.
I mean, I don't know. They might have a reference to that in the dialogue.
That'd be darn hilarious if they did. You complete 200 hard mode kills and you get a fancy new skin for him as well once you get the pet. But that's the rewards from the Zekar front. I'm with you, Tanis. We're going to have to see how the rewards look aside from the capes on this, because for normal mode, there's really not much I'm seeing aside from the off chance of a scripture in the ability book. That's going to be interesting. So it's going to be in the other drops, I bet.
And I wonder if it's going to work the same way where you have to do the majority of it in whatever style you get the cape with.
No. You're going to get stone, and then you can use it on whichever cape you want.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
Yeah. Yeah. Which makes sense, because, yeah, I mean, I think good. At this point, you're probably going to want to, I don't know, if it uses the same mechanics as before and they're weak against water, you might wind up, you know, using Insight Fear and Animate Dead on this if you're using tank armor, if you want to go that way.
Yeah. Well, it made the kiln a lot. It made it harder to have to do that style, that particular style, because some of them took a lot longer than others.
That's interesting you're talking about that, because that's actually on my to-do list for this weekend.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But more on that later. But of course, it wouldn't be an RSBNB update week if we didn't talk about the God banter from this week. Things are really starting to heat up here as we approach the final front and the final, the next piece of lore. I assume it's not the final piece of lore that comes from our four gods here. Will drop with the front on Monday. But things are getting desperate. Even Saren admits that the four gods there are at their limits. She's scared because she doesn't know how they would respond to a greater onslaught. Armadil says that, is there no one else, you know, we could call? Have we sent envoys to every corner of the world? Surely there are others who could come. Saren then says, we've sent word as far as wide as we can. Many have sent us contingents of troops or supplies. Many more have their own concerns. The release of Anathema, or Shadow Anima, has harmed crops at crop harvests and caused unrest. And there are those who deny that the threat exists, based in political grandstanding, fear or both. It is all too easy to ignore a world-ending threat when it's buried beneath the earth. I have exerted what influence I can. Anyone who has not arrived by now is not coming at all.
Thank you, sir. Thank you.
I'm going to keep reading because,
self.
Because there's more that we can unpack from this. And our production team who did the bit had some words about this earlier this week. So Sarah Doman then chimes in, the mortals have availed themselves, exceeding every expectation. Enough is enough. We must intervene. Yes, there is a risk to leaving the eggs, but surely. And then Zamorak chimes in, bringing some reason, saying, Sarah Doman, you're lying to yourself. Look, no one would be happier to wade into battle than I would, but we've been here long enough to know that that's not an option. Saren was right from the off. And then Armadil really throws a wrinkle into it. I think the second wrinkle in this piece of dialogue, and he says that the eggs are actually growing in strength. At this time, draining them is the only thing that's preventing our destruction, and eventually, though, we need to find another solution. The impasse can't continue. We cannot stay stuck here while the mortals die by attrition. Then do not rely upon mortals, Zamorak says. Armadil says, what? You just said you didn't mean us, did you? Zamorak says, the devastation among our ground forces is widespread. There's an ample supply of corpses. No, I absolutely forbid it. And you know where they're going here, but I'll read the next few lines. Zamorak says, the time for sentiment is long past, Saradoan. We must do what is necessary if we are to survive. At what cost? I will not subject my people to further. And at this point, Sarah Doman is interrupted by Saren, who says, do it. Then Sarah Doman warns her, Saren, you cannot. Saren says, our troops have given their lives to protect those they love. Do you not think they would do so time and again were the choice theirs? Send word to your necromancers, Zamorak. Have them make their preparations. It shall be done. I commend your wisdom, Lady Saren. And then Armadil says, and what has the crystal goddess to fear that she might resort to such debasement? Saren says, the first servants of the elders have been so far conspicuous in their absence. Armadil says, the Takhar? They are formidable, but we handle them well at the monolith. Saren then wraps this all up, saying, Full was watching. She will send more than Takhar this time. Now I feel a disturbance, a thrumming deep within Gielinor's core. They are coming, and I don't know what else to do. Okay, so first off, we have a little bit of a thread of dealing with things like how people deal with things in real life, of just ignoring that a simple thread exists. And this is made clear by Saren, who says that, you know, based in, out of political grandstanding, fear of both. And we had a discussion in our lore chat this week and said that, you know, we really hope that they don't push down this path, because this would be a political allegory of real life that I don't think RuneScape needs. And I know you chimed in as well on that, Chaos. So what do you think on that?
I personally think that it might either be a reference to the cultist's journey in Yak Trek, even though Yak Trek is very semi-canon.
Yeah.
With Johannes, or it just might be a general reflection of people how people tend to react in these situations. Like I said, I truly hope that they don't go down the political route. I mean, me too. The perils of Ice Mountain was bad enough.
Yeah, I agree.
So as important these issues are, I don't think it'll translate particularly well, especially because RuneScape is a British game. So.
Right. I 100% agree with you on that sentiment, and you're right. I think, you know, tying it to the cultists, as was in Yak Track, would probably be the logical way to go about this. Tanis, do you have any thoughts?
I mean, I think it was funny for a quick joke, but yeah, I mean, I don't think they're going to pursue a path. They never really have.
Yeah.
Mm. And business don't, that ain't,
wouldn't be good for business. Pick,
they don't like to pick sides like that, right? Like, yeah, but I found it humorous and I quite enjoyed it.
Yeah. I can see how you can get a chuckle out of that.
I mean, we're all doing, or, you know, there are people doing the Halloween event up front, you know, Harold's hanging out there. He's like, yeah, get some bones, get some potatoes. Don't worry about everything going downstairs. Fine.
Oh, that's wonderful. That's wonderful. Okay. Thing number two we picked up on this week is that the eggs are actually growing in strength despite them being siphoned. And I think the question that leads to for me is that, what is the second solution that they could go for? Because they said that they need to find another solution. So that's obviously the next chapter in this. We charted that path in the monthly bit. But where do we go from there?
Guess you'd have to listen to the bit. Be a patron subscriber.
But we didn't account for the eggs getting more powerful in that. So I don't know if our story could even account for the eggs getting more powerful. What do you think, Chaos?
It's simply more of a story indication that they're getting ready to hatch.
Okay.
I think
that's an interesting way of looking at it.
So they are getting more powerful, but I mean, what's the conclusive end of that? You know, they're not going to start floating above everybody and shooting lasers, you know. I think the natural conclusion, I think the way that Saren was putting it was kind of more creative shorthand of they are reaching they're reaching a natural conclusion, and that natural conclusion is that they are going to hatch, you know, and that's part of it, you know. They will hatch when they reach, you know, a certain animal level from what we have seen established in the lore. So I think it's definitely, it's along the same lines as we predicted, or as we're trying to predict. They are going to hatch, or they're at the very precipice of hatching, and it's just reaching a natural boiling point. You know, their condition is not stable, and it's not just the threat from the outside, from the elders that we're facing, but the fact that these things are potentially going to pop out and, you know, swallow everything around them, and it's not going to be pretty.
No. And what we have of Sentistan could get a whole lot more dilapidated, even, you know, given the fact that come Monday, there'll be a big crater right where those supply lines are running. So I also think our idea of the cathedral being almost overrun is a good one as well. But I'm giving too much away from that monthly bit. Just become a Patreon subscriber and give a listen to that. Okay. Necromancers, Zamorak's Necromancers.
That is something that I did not predict.
Well, it would give us an opening for Ichlarin, wouldn't it?
It would. It would give us an opening for Ichlarin stepping in. I mean, he's not going to be pleased.
Because that is one thing we weren't able to figure out in our storyline of it.
Mm. So it's, I think that there are kind of two ways that this can go about. I mean, maybe the quickest conclusion that you could come to is they're just going to raise the dead troops and they keep on fighting where they were fighting, which is a little repetitive. You know, you just raise a bunch of zombies and they continue doing what they're doing. Yeah. I suppose it would provide the continuity of, like, everybody's eternally fighting
to
down
keep the
there,
front
you know?
Going. And then that can, in effect, tide us over until we manage to get in with another quest or something to come up with the permanent solution.
The other less natural path, you know, if you think about Nomad's Elegy, are they going to try and create another Gilinor? Which is, again, a little bit out of the left field, but it's a possibility.
Create another Gilinor for...
either siphoning off the eggs or just attempting to face off the fronts themselves.
So how would they create another one?
That is a question that's up in the air, which I think is, again, which is why it's a little bit out of the left field. And yeah. I think that the first one is a little bit more logical.
Because there's no way you could just, you know, use anima and create and copy the world, could you?
I mean, the amalgamated god from a Nomad's Elegy, you know, where they smush together all the dead souls. Yeah. So, I believe Nomad did that through the soul through the soul obelisk. So how would they do that without tying in Nomad? I don't know. So I don't see it as terribly likely.
Yeah, that one, you're right. That is a bit off left field there.
So, it'll be interesting. And I think it'll definitely set up for the next possible storyline that they're kind of teasing for 2022. You know,
which chaos do you have an idea what that might be?
Oh God, I wish people would stop DMing me about that. So I know that they have mentioned that they're turning to more of a people or just individual focused storyline. So I certainly see, a return to the classic Sarah Doman and Zamorak, or you know, good versus evil instead of everybody versus universal cosmic horror type of deal. So from what I can see from this, it's going to add some logical continuity in terms of, again, having everybody perpetually fighting in there, as well as kind of provide that thread onto the next thing that we have going. Because, you know, when all's said and done, when the dust settles, I don't think Sarah Doman's going to be really happy with how we got to our particular conclusion. No. And there is going to be bad blood around.
Yeah, and you can just see his reaction, how it drives him to silence when Saren requests the necromancers.
Mm.
So that's going to be interesting to see how long that takes to develop. But I'm happy leaving that there. Right now, Tanis, any other further thoughts before we see a giant crater emerge?
Nope. Let's get another crater going. I mean, maybe we can have some seasonal events here. Or something.
Yeah, I was about to say that. Into the hole.
Oh,
we go down. We get a little bit of dungeoneering.
Yeah, I could go for that. I could go for that. But speaking of XP. Double XP Live returns November 5th, runs through November 15th. They did say there'd be a bit of an extra twist behind it, but they have not revealed that yet. They said it would be related to the death angle of it, but it's the typical 10 days, 48 hours of double XP, as we've been having for the better bit of a year and a half now on that. So it comes yet again. November 5th.
Works. It just works.
Any plans yet?
I mean, all I can do is farm, so I just have to figure out what to buy my grow potions and what to farm. I mean, I just have to figure out what to
Magic
do.
Magic seeds would be good. The mushroom ones are also good. I think they're the stink shrooms, if I remember correctly.
Where do you grow that at, though?
Which, like, what the stink shrooms?
Mm-hmm.
Just any fungus patch, like the one in Caniphus there.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And then just rinse and repeat on that. Chances are, if people are doing it, it might not be good money necessarily to sell it, but I mean, it is decent.
Yeah, XP. I ain't worried about that.
So, cool. But you could, you know, go through all your trees if you wanted to do that. But I think stink shrooms were proven to be the best one, if I remember correctly. Or was it the tomb shrooms? I can never keep them clear.
Well, I knew the tomb shrooms were like a big deal.
That might be the one then. That might be the one. How about you, Chaos? Any double XP plans?
Prayer.
Oh, my God.
So tired of not having Soul Split. My account is severely underleveled, unfortunately. I don't use Treasure Hunter, and I don't like using it. And I spend too much of my time doing quests to skill, so hopefully I could finally grind to 99 and be done with it. And stop looking so sad and noobish whenever people invite me to PVM.
Aw, that's fine. I mean, I don't necessarily... I honestly think when it comes to PVM, I think it's hyped up a lot with what you need, and you can do a lot more with less, in all honesty. Though Soul Split is a life changer, I will say that.
Yeah.
So.
Now, I finally purchased my Nox Scythe from all of my... Croesus funds, and I'm nice. Very happy with it.
Yeah,
and
see, that's, I think, the big takeaway from this is that Croesus has brought those PVM levels of money making to the skillers, which, if you have a good group, it's an, you know, it's an easy 12 mil an hour on that, more if you get a good drop. So
it really is. And like, I think it's also a good gateway in terms of introducing those mechanics, you know, those timed events.
Yep.
Those coordinating, you do this, you do right. this.
And then
you can adapt quickly if someone, you know, messes up.
Then after that, you move on to the Archglacer and work your way up to five full mechanics on that. Then after you're comfortable on that, maybe you give Carapac a try. I don't know.
Mm.
Something to that effect. So. I think that's going to be the underappreciated storyline of the Elder God Wars dungeon. But we're going to move on. We do have a question this week from Bears, and he says, when the Elder God Wars was announced to be broken up into four fronts a month, or coming from into four fronts, one a month, people freaked out. Now that the fourth front is here, do you guys like this format? Are you glad they did it this way? He says, I personally loved it. Yeah, you remember those calls that it was going to be batched content after our experience with Battle of the Monolith?
How'd that work out for everybody?
Yeah. I think it worked out really well. Personally, I couldn't imagine trying to cover more than one of these bosses on a single week of the show.
Oh, yeah. No way. No way.
I mean, even if you did, you know, the Glacier and Croesus the same week, that would still be too much.
Mm-hmm.
So it needed to be done this way. And I think the difference of what we give up with this one compared to Elder God Wars 2 and Elder God Wars 1 is that in Elder God Wars 1 and 2, the experience starts outside in the front where you get your 40 kill count. But here... you have the Nodon, the Dragonkin, the skilling nodes, and presumably a checkpoint push inside the Zekar front. When you combine all those different things together, what you have outside of the individual boss battles, I think, feels auxiliary to the actual bosses themselves, which is a refreshing take, because if you just want to go fight this thing, you can do that. You don't necessarily need to go through the time that it takes to get 40 kill count, or worry about completing a reputation, because we know at some point in RuneScape's history how toxic reputation systems became. So mm-hmm. I think that overall it was pretty well done, and I do like it done this way.
And appreciate also, it from the fact that again, I think it allowed people to divest their time and attention to kind of the finer bits of everything going on. You know, when the dragon, when the Nodon front came out, you know, people were actually able to focus fire on Carapac, getting that pet, checking out the construction, checking out the cannon, so on and so forth. With Croesus in particular, I was really thankful for the fact that it came out independently, because, you know, I didn't have to split my attention between different bosses, and particularly because this is it's a group boss, it has to be a group boss. I don't know if anybody's been able to solo it. You know, you didn't have to say, oh, come on, man, like, can you take a break from Carapac and help me out with this? You know, you felt like you kind of covered the territory that you needed to, and then you could go on to the next thing. It makes me a little bit worried about replayability And hopefully when the dust has settled and all of the bosses and the fronts and everything are all said and done, it'll even out a little bit more and people, you know, will go and do Archglaze Sor and go and do Carapac and go and do Krosis and go and do Zook on their own terms without like that impetus and yeah. the initial fury of it. But I think it's made people savor it a little bit more. It's kind of like the difference between having each course given to you at a meal instead of having a full buffet that you got to fight over.
That's a good analogy. I know for me, Carapac has been my go-to Reaper task if I get Reaper's Choice coming up. I know for people who want a challenge, hard mode Glacier has been the thing to do. And for, you know, people in Clan Quest who just want to, you know, kind of relax on a Saturday, that's Krosis. So there's a case that I see. I could go to any of those bosses if I really wanted to myself. So I'd like to see more like this, but I don't know how you would do it for the next story beat. And I hope that this is going to continue. And this is where we go into last week's section. I hope this is going to continue, Tanis, given the fact that Mod Warden has departed, because I feel very much like this, at least the push to deliver in this manner, was a Mod Warden push.
It was, and I also feel like having lore and story wrapped up into every yeah. update was also a Mod Warden push. We'll see.
Yeah, fingers crossed on that they're able to continue with that. So so I think that's from the panel, is that that's an all-rounding yes here. So.
Hopefully in this case, form will follow function, and, you know, if the success of this particular thing is seen, they will try and replicate that. So, and I certainly don't think that it's one size fits all, or it's a one size fits all solution for every kind of story
content.
But I can say that I appreciate the execution of this very much, and you know that's a feather in Jagex's cap.
And I feel like earned that feather. And I feel like it was pulled off better than it was with Battle of the Monolith. Though maybe that was our own perspective we were putting on that.
These are big time events, and those are just small little chapters, right? We talked about having that split up and why that was felt, you know, a little weird. This needed to be that way. It's just too much of everything. It's too much when it comes to the boss and the mechanics and the story and I think this was done right. I definitely agree with Chaos. Jagex did a good job with their spacing and their pacing of Elder God Wars.
Yep. All right. If you guys want to send your own questions in, email them to questions@rsbnb.com or leave them at update.rsbnb.com/ask, or you can reply when we post on Twitter on the week, assuming I can spell Tanis's name correctly next week and not do an autocorrect on it. You didn't see that, did you, Tanis?
I did not.
I was going fast and I didn't pay attention to the autocorrect, and your name came out as Arabia instead of Tanis.
Well, it could have been worse. I could have tried using my dictation and God knows what we would have gotten.
Yep. That's right. We always go back to that because you and I have had so many funny mishaps texting where I'm like, what did you mean by that? Or I have to do a double take and try and decipher it because the dictation isn't spot on.
No.
All right. On to our picks of the week. And I got one that is perhaps going to be a head scratcher, but if you've ever wanted to attend a course from MIT, you can do that, as they have a whole number of them that are actually available now for free on a YouTube channel called MIT Open Courseware. And one of the interesting ones they have is they have a series on nuclear physics, in particularly Chernobyl, how Chernobyl happened. They also have one of their graduate students who went to Chernobyl on a research trip and covered a lecture on that as well. So there's a whole series on these that are, you know, 45, 50 minutes long, and you can, in effect, just take one in at your own pace. And if you need to, you know, stop along the way and look something up. But this is part of a series on nuclear physics. And if you're ever interested in terms of what actually happened at Chernobyl without reading it into it yourself, you can take a look at the MIT OpenCourseWare lecture that I posted. And this is why I never watched the Chernobyl TV shows, because I knew it was done up dramatically. And when it comes to things like that, for me personally, I just prefer to get them how they actually are in reality without the whole dramatic lens on it. So if this is something you're interested in, or you're even just interested in seeing what is available, it's a YouTube channel called MIT OpenCourseWare, and you can find it in our show notes at update.rsbnb.com. And, you know, of course, being me, I had to pick the nuclear physics one.
Of course.
So if you've ever wanted to know what happened there, just, you know, give this a watch. It's actually quite interesting and easy to understand. At least I felt it was. So that's my pick of the week.
Right,
and it's got pictures and whatnot too.
Ooh.
All right, Tanis, sell us your pick of the week.
All right. So you probably heard there is a new game out, and it is getting the attention of a lot of RuneScape players. So I've even heard people call it Newscape, in some instances. But there is a new MMO out there called New World. What would RuneScape be like if it had the controls of Elder Scrolls and similar graphics, but retained its charm with having a classless system and many gathering skills and crafting skills, and throw in a touch of Darkscape, where there you can either flag yourself for PvP or not. It doesn't matter. And factions can own territory. And when you trade at the trading post in said faction's territory, they get a piece of the action. They get a little bit of the tax that's put on that transaction, which they can then use to upgrade the crafting stations in the towns that they.
Okay. Then you become part of one of those, right?
That's right. And, you know, of course it has its dungeons and raid type, you know, things. But I haven't really even done a lot of that because I've really been enjoying doing what I do a lot of in RuneScape, which is skilling. Been doing a lot of gathering. I remember when I first started the game, it reminded me of RuneScape, where you're killing cows, only on New World you're killing pigs, you know. So that was kind of neat. And here's the other really kind of cool thing is the XP, the majority of the XP, it's all coming through quest, whether those are main storylines, side quests.
Okay, so it's like Elder Scrolls in that way then.
Yes, and it's pretty, like, the quest I've been going on, I've enjoyed it. I definitely like that style a lot more.
Right.
So, and it's kind of this, like, it's hard to put it in like a time period because it's a fantasy game, but think, like, you know, they wear like the conquistador helmets, and there are you can get a musket, but it's still, you know, pretty much sword and board, axes, and
yeah,
you know, but the nice thing is, like, while there's magic and there's healers and there's support, you know, roles and all this, it's still classless. So whatever you're wearing and whatever you're like training, that's what experience you're gaining, making, you know, improving those skills. kind of like how RuneScape works, right? Like, where if you're wearing melee gear and you've got your experience set to melee, you're trained at melee. But there's nothing prohibiting you to then switching to ranged and going and doing ranged stuff.
Interesting. So, it's almost like they read
everything about we RS complained about.
And then, you know, said, okay, this didn't work for World of Warcraft, or World of Warcraft was different. Let's do something pretty different on this. And I think it's Amazon Studios, and it's a one-time purchase, right, with cosmetic MTX, yes?
Yeah, that's the other really interesting part of this. There is no speed up boost of any kind. It's all yet, but it's cosmetic. Well, there might not be, though. I mean, does Amazon need to do that? I think they'll get their foot in the door this way. I think this will be an expansion model where we may see something like this every year.
How long do you think the content would last you for without an expansion, I wonder?
Well, that's the thing. Like,
is there a level cap? Or?
Yeah, 60 is kind of your in game, you know, where you start your in game. But because it's so rich and heavy on its like hardcore dungeons and its PvP, that keeps it, I think that's going to hold the, you know, that's going to hold people's appetite.
You know what you're describing? You're describing a medieval Star Trek Online, because you get your XP in that from the episodes and whatnot. The only thing we don't have, of course, is the gathering skills. So it's basically Star Trek Online, but with gathering skills. What I think you're describing, because there is an end game to that. That was once PvP, but it is, of course, since.
Oh,
since
and here's shifted. The other. You know, you know how you mentioned like someone read the was reading r/RuneScape. There's no there's teleporting, but most no there's stones. No mounts.
Yeah.
There's no lodestone. There's no mounts.
So they're on the no mount rule as well.
So I mean you're hoofing it for much of the game. Like, and there's a you literally do what they call it, like spawn dying or whatever. So if you're really far away and you're trying to turn in a quest, just respawn, because you're gonna respawn in the settlement versus running all the way back there.
Good old Edgeville teleport.
There you go.
That's funny. That's funny.
Yeah.
All right. And how much was it?
It was only $40, which I didn't think was too bad. I mean, for a new game that's only been out for 2 weeks, I feel like I'm getting my money's worth.
All right. How about you, Chaos? What's your pick of the week?
So I'm going to recommend a book that was published in 2006, but I just recently finished.
That's allowed.
A lot of y'all may have heard of it because the BBC did a miniseries on this in 2015, Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell. I finished it. It's something like 900 pages. And when I was done, I was extremely sad when I was wrapped up with it. It is a Regency. It's late Georgian pre-Regency tale of two English magicians who apparently are prophesied to bring back magic to a alternate history Britain where magic is real. And I just deeply enjoy this book, not just as a reader, but as a writer, because the writer, Susanna Clarke, has absolutely done her research on this particular era and the social mannerisms and the way of speaking. And I am just into that. The writing is extremely solid. The world building is really interesting. And I desperately want a sequel or a spinoff of it at some point. The author has said that she's not going to do that, so I'm very disappointed, but I also respect that. But it's a very solid book if you want 900 pages of Jane Austen-esque / Charles Dickens-esque sardonicism and footnotes that take up an entire page.
Oh, wow.
Which, as a Terry Pratchett fan, is extremely appealing to me. It might not be appealing to everybody.
Nice. And, you know, I have to agree with you is that I don't read much fiction, but when I do or did, the world building behind it, if that's not there, it just completely ruins immersion and I'm really not able to continue. And that's part of the reason I generally stick away from friction. I mean, fiction. But yeah, that sounds good. And, you know, I think that's kind of in the same vein of what most of the listeners of this podcast would like, that same kind of fantasy genre and whatnot. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure it's available as well on audio if you want it as well, Tennis. I think most things are in this day and age, right?
Yeah, yeah, no. For the most part, yeah. I have a funny story another time, Shane, about that.
Okay, fair enough. So that's Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell. I put the Goodreads link in, but I imagine you can find it on Amazon or Audible or anywhere you get your books.
Yeah, it's just really solidly written. And I have a lot of complaints about modern literature and prose and everything that I can go on for probably a YouTube essay that I won't go into.
Interesting.
It's very solidly written. Again, if you like footnotes that take up a ludicrous amount of space, you will have a good time.
Alrighty. Well, let's start us off with some achievements. What do you got this week for us, Tanis?
All right. Well, starting off on the 20th, we have Delinda EST one with 120 strength. We have Shiro Shama with 120 farming. We have The Outdoors with 99 fletching. And then on the 19th, we have Ripoff with 99 fire making and Shamrock Soup with 99 defense.
Nicely done.
Going into October 18th, congratulations to Darkest Night for getting 99 archaeology. Also on the 18th, Free Milk, 99 Strength, and Zabros, 99 Fletching. And October 17th, The Lion, congratulations for getting 200 million Magic XP, and Vapor, 13579 for 99 Farming.
And continuing on the 15th, we have Crazy Legs, 722 with 99 Farming, Delta Polo with 99 Mining, Curtains with 99 Crafting, The Outdoors again with 99 cooking on the 15th, and on the 14th we have Arendelle 20 with 120 archaeology, a wonderful, wonderful skill. All right.
Everybody skipped a skilling on the 16th, I guess?
Yeah, I guess so. I guess we didn't have any. I guess we didn't have any on the 16th. But
everybody took a little break then.
Yeah, they're saving up for double XP, calm before the storm. Those weeks are always fun here. Aye. All right. Well, speaking of ramping up, Tanis, what have you been up to?
You know, I've really just been chopping trees. I'm still making money off this elder.
Yeah.
The elder logs and the splintering arrows. So while money is there to be made, that's what I'm doing. I've just been I put in an offer for the second offhand for the hammer.
Right.
And then every time I do a run, I just cash it in and then I adjust the GE price and eventually it's going to buy. And that's what we're doing. Yeah.
Nice. Yeah. Those offhands are, I know we gave a lot of flack when Orphan came out to the first two, but I feel these two really do have an impact for mining and wood cutting. So that's appreciated. Yeah. That's appreciated a lot. With that. So, how about you, Chaos? What you been up to on RS?
I have been questing. I am working my way towards getting the quest cape on this current account. I'm splitting my time between writing and playing RuneScape and trying to level for all those quests. So it's not going as fast as I want to. And unfortunately, it looks like I'm going to have to do rat catchers fairly soon. Ooh. I'm not looking forward to that.
No.
It's one of my least favorite quests in the world, if not my least favorite quest in the entire world.
Yeah,
and I don't want to. I played it back in 2008 on my first account. I don't want to do it again on this account, but I'm going to have to.
Yeah, and you have to wonder, you know, how much of that is bad memory and how much of that is actual. And I guess you'll find that out as you progress through that.
It's not going to be a good time. I don't want to risk my cat. I don't like doing that.
Yes. Yes, that's exactly it. And, you know, the thing I always say about questing or a skill that you like, don't rush it. because then you have the Questscape, then you have 99 in a few skills, then you have 99 and a half your skills, then you're maxed, then it becomes a question of what to do for 120, and all the skills you like doing are behind you, so don't rush it, just enjoy the journey, I say. That's what I have to say on that. So,
unless catchers, but
yeah. As for me this week, same boat as you, Tanis. Lots of wood cutting. Then I switched to a Halloween event for a few days, and I'll probably go back to wood cutting before I have everything I want from the Halloween event. But today, before the podcast, I needed to get a second fire cape because my first fire cape is sitting in the hidey hole in Menaphos Library for the clue scrolls. And I wanted a second fire cape so I could sacrifice it and do the kiln this weekend before the Zekar front comes out, because I do plan on trying to get at least one of the cape upgrades next week on that. So it'd be nice to have a cape going into that. I'm thinking either magic or ranged personally on that. But that was a throwback from the past, because my fight cave run only took me 37 minutes to do. Whereas back in the olden days, I remember looking at, 80 to 90 minutes for a fight cave run before EOC came out.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one of those things where the memory is different from what it is in actuality today.
So. Yeah. Well, you probably flew through the first 20 waves.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I actually did the entire thing without using a piece of food or Saradomin brew.
Oh, wow.
Nice.
That was with Animate Dead, though, and Tank Armor. So that does have an impact, of course, on that. And currently working out the strategy of how to do the fight kiln, because I've never actually done that before. So that's going to be this weekend, figuring out the fight kiln and getting the capes. But
it's fun.
But I guess if you can do it, it shouldn't be too bad, right? When did you do it?
A few years ago. Okay. I did it a lot when I started streaming.
Right, so so obviously we've power crept since then, so it should be fine.
Oh yeah, I mean it's not really that hard.
All right, well I will report back next week on that. So I don't think there's much else for us to talk about on this week's episode. I'll just say to subscribe to the podcast on YouTube. We're approaching that 1,000 subscriber mark. Bit of a personal goal that we've set. So if you're not subscribed at YouTube, at youtube.com/rsbnb, definitely subscribe there. Like the episodes. It helps us out in terms of discoverability. youtube.com/rsbnb. But we're also on a whole suite of podcast listeners out there. We're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google, Pocket Cast, Stitcher, and everyone's favorite Amazon devices through Amazon Music. So that means, of course, if you have one of those A or E devices that likes talking and listening back to you, you can probably listen to RSBNB Update on that as well, and you can find out more about where to find us at update.rsbnb.com/subscribe. But with that being said, we'll be back next week for the final Elder God Wars front, the Zekar front. Thank you, Chaos Elemental, for being here. It was nice having you on the show.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been awesome.
Of course, and Tanis and I will be back next week. See you next week, everyone. Take care.
See ya.